Accession number 19896, Reel 4.
General Woodford, Reel 4.
Right, we were talking about operations against the IRA in 71-72. As I say, the rate of operations was fairly intensive. A lot of it was to do with civil rights marches and the like, but there was also the usual patrolling, particularly in the border areas. And as I say, it was very difficult because they were very elusive. And of course, they had a very ready refuge, which was just to nip across the border, which was not very carefully manned or very heavily manned. It couldn't be. So they always had that kind of refuge. And of course, if you take a place like Londonderry, with the no-go areas, the Bogside and the Cregan in particular, but of course, nothing could be easier for them than to get out of the province altogether, which they did. If there's any sign of trouble, they were away into places like Letterkenny, just like that, which of course is what happened later on in the year when we actually took the Bogside back. We got rid of the no-go areas. This was Operation Motorman.
Did that involve you?
Yes, indeed. That was later in the year. What happened was we went through the tail end of the internment problems. We then had Bloody Sunday and all the civil rights marches. The next phase of difficulty was the assumption of direct rule from Westminster, or as I once said in an unguarded moment, a slip of the tongue, direct rule from Warminster, which is not quite the same thing. You probably don't realise why that's funny, but it is to an infantryman, because Warminster was the headquarters of the School of Infantry. But I remember saying that at some point, and it became a sort of saying around the battalion. Anyway, during that time, there was a lot of trouble from what were called at that time tartan gangs, which is not quite accurate, but it was what they were really extremist Protestant organisations, if you can call them that. Incidentally, I've always resented and still do, and do my best to avoid using terms like loyalists, which I don't think is accurate, and I do my best to avoid referring to the IRA in the way that was done at the time, and for all I know still is, and particularly in the intelligence world where they used to talk about IRA battalions and quartermasters and this sort of thing. I always thought it gave them a dignity and an organisation they didn't deserve. I'm not saying they didn't have an organisation, but it certainly wasn't like that. And I refused ever to use it, either then or later when I commanded a brigade. And none of my staff were allowed to use it either. However, that's another story. But we had direct rule from Westminster. Trouble there.
You were talking about the tartan gangs, I think.
Well, yes, they were called tartan gangs. They were really mostly Protestant yobs who were out to make as much trouble as they could. And they were tiresome rather than really dangerous. Well, they could be dangerous. And of course, the other worst thing about it was that they really raised the temperature and, of course, provided targets for the opposition. But so that was all very difficult and troublesome. And then there was a sort of slight pause, I suppose you might say, and this is when our tour, which by this time anyway had already been extended well beyond the four-month point, came to an end, and we returned to our base in England. And we hadn't been back for more than a couple of weeks when there's another drama blew up in Londonderry in particular. And I was rung up at lunchtime one Monday and asked how soon I could have the battalion back in the province. And I said, I can, you know, within the day, if you can fly us there, which they did. And so, sure enough, we were there 24 hours later, back in the province, having only just come out of it, and had just had time for about, I think we had 2 weeks' leave. And that particular tour lasted from whenever it was, late May, early June, and it went on until about October. At which point I handed over to my successor. But when we went back, first of all, into Londonderry, where there had been a drama because a particular unit had got itself into a muddle in the city, and we had to go and take over from them. It wasn't their fault, in my view. I mean, I think they should never have been put there in the first place, but this particular unit had found itself really getting into all kinds of trouble. They didn't really know how to manage affairs because they had no advice, they'd had no training. They'd just been plucked out of what you might call a very static role in Germany and chucked in the deep end, and I always thought they would have been very harshly treated. Anyway, they had got themselves into this muddle. We were required to go in there and sort it out, which we did. Part of this particular unit was left under my command, which was a bit embarrassing for the management of that outfit, I'd thought, but still they handled it all very well. And I discovered that with a bit of help and encouragement, they operated very well. And they did very well. And eventually they came to the end of their tour and they went. And we stayed on. And then we prepared for what became known as Operation Motorman. That happened on the 1st of August 1972, simultaneously in Londonderry and in West Belfast. And this was really getting back the no-go areas, which, as I said earlier, should never have been allowed to happen in the first place. And this amounted, really, in my case, my job with my battalion was to go and take back the bogside, which we duly did. I mean, there's a lot more to it than I told you, but that's what we did. It was a relatively peaceful operation to start with, because, for reasons I needn't go into, the management telegraphed what they were going to do so efficiently over the media that the opposition knew exactly what was going to happen, almost down to the last detail. And so the real hoods took off. We only had a few little snipings when we went in, but nothing much, nothing very serious, because we knew by that time all the real hard men had taken off. We were in places like Letterkenny. And the troubles really returned later on. But we went into the bogside and took that over, and other fellow battalions went and took over, another battalion went and took over the Craigan. And having taken them over, we then sat there and patrolled them and made sure the hoods didn't come back. And that was going on still about the time I handed over to my successor. By which time, as I say, the battalion was really quite tired, having had a very strenuous year, pretty well. And I then took off. We then did go back to our base in England, where I'd actually handed over to my successor. And I then went straight out to Cyprus to the adventures we had then.
And the second time you went back to Northern Ireland was as brigadier?
Yes, that was after the Cyprus troubles of the middle 70s, and I had a gap between jobs for a few months, and then I went out to command 3 Brigade, which had its headquarters at that time in Portadown, and which had as its area of operations was 4 of the counties and the whole of the border and South Armagh. So it was a very interesting time.
Had the situation changed much by 76, 77?
It had a bit. It wasn't quite so hectic in places. I mean, it had sort of, it flared up and then down again, but it had stabilised quite a bit. It had become a little bit, in some ways, almost too routine. And they had established things which I must confess I didn't care for. For example, permanent vehicle checkpoints. This was a great bone of contention. I disliked them, and it took me a long time, but I managed eventually to get the management in Lisbon, the headquarters, to get rid of these permanent ones, which were great big sort of fortress-like things, or could be, and to run a mobile random system instead, which apart from anything else was very much more economical in manpower, and in my view was much more effective, quite apart from the fact it didn't provide the sort of target that a permanent building or a series of bunkers and chicanes and the like did, which of course were targets, and I'm afraid there were one or two pretty unattractive incidents where they were targeted by the opposition. I don't recall there was ever a really bad one in my time, but there certainly were, had been before, and there were after I'd been there. And I was sorry to see later on, when I'd handed over my brigade to somebody else, that under a later regime, they started bringing these permanent vehicle checkpoints back in again. I thought that was a mistake, but still.
Any other innovations which you try to bring in?
Well, it wasn't so much innovations, but it was just a method of operating. But it was just a way of running affairs, and it was a very big area with not that large number of troops, although I did have a pretty large empire, and I had a whole string of UDR battalions, admirable people, all over those 4 counties. Wonderful they were, and I'm still lost in admiration at them. I'm appalled that they were disbanded. But I had a whole lot of them, and of course I had a very large number of British Army who came through on Roulement, as it was called. I've forgotten what the total was. Somebody did, I've got it somewhere, a list of all the units that came through my brigade and my time in command. I know that the figures ran to something well over 12,000, I think, during that time. So it was a lot going on. When it comes to innovations, I wouldn't say that exactly, although by that time the training system of preparing units for Northern Ireland had become very, very much more efficient and sophisticated than it had been in the earlier years, and by this time it was very good indeed. We had a lot of very much more efficient and modern equipment, particularly in the surveillance field, And at long last, we began to use our special forces. And I think that I had something to do with that as well, in getting the management, and again, I'm talking about the headquarters and others, to accept that people like the SAS could be used and used extremely effectively, and that they were not something that you should be nervous of or scared they were going to start something you didn't want to finish. Because I'm afraid the general attitude towards them from the senior levels was pretty wary. And therefore, for quite a long time, they weren't deployed and they weren't used in the way they should have been. That's my own view. It remains my view. But they did, once they were used, and we had to work very hard to persuade the management that they could be used properly, they were very effective and had a number of very notable successes during my time and well after it as well. There were some setbacks too, of course, as it always happens. But it was a very interesting time, there's no doubt of that. And then, of course, by the time I left there, which was at the end of 77, it settled into a kind of, I don't know what you'd call it exactly, but it certainly stabilized even more. And there were various sort of phony truces and one thing or another thereafter. And it never really got back, even allowing for some particularly unattractive and unpleasant incidents that have happened, individual ones, both in the province and on the mainland. But it never got back to the really hectic and really rather chaotic conditions that there were in the early 70s and to some extent in the middle.